the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
More crypto regulation is on its way, and it will be aimed at providing guide rails for the massive and growing stablecoin market. The US has passed the Genius Act, spelling out how stablecoin issuers require one-to-one reserves in liquid assets like short-term treasuries, along with monthly public reserve disclosures. MiCA, which stands for Markets in Crypto Assets Regulation, is Europe's answer to the emergence of stablecoins and does pretty much the same thing as the Genius Act in the US. So where does South Africa sit in this emerging landscape? Vihan Olafia, partner and global co-head of digital assets for Forbes Mazars, has been looking into this, and he joins us once again. Hi, Vihan. Good to talk to you again. Is South Africa ready for the stablecoin revolution? And if not, how do we get ready?
Yeah, hi, Kieran. First of all, it's a pleasure being back on the show. I think it's been several months since we've chatted, so it's great being on the show again. I think a lot has happened in the digital asset space over the last time that we've spoken. Stablecoins in particular have moved from something quite niche to something that regulators, banks, and businesses are effectively looking at now. So I think it's a really timely conversation for us to have. I think, and to answer the question about whether South Africa is ready for a stablecoin revolution, I think we first need to make sure that we're all talking about the same thing when we speak about the term stablecoin. It's often misunderstood or confused with other concepts. Now, I know there's a lot of listeners out there, but I think for the novice listeners out there, just to explain the topic of stablecoins, and Ethereum blockchain introduced that idea of smart contract functionality, which allows anyone to create a non-native token on the Ethereum blockchain, which was essentially where stablecoins were born. And the business model itself is actually very straightforward. For every $1 that a stablecoin issuer receives into the bank account, they issue one digital token on the blockchain. So in theory, there's always a one-to-one link between the money sitting in the bank account and the tokens in circulation on the blockchain. Of course, that has evolved, and we can chat about that maybe a little later as well. But what this effectively does is allow traditional fiat currencies to move as freely as information over the internet. So you've got the speed, the programmability, and the global reach of blockchain technology, but without the price of volatility associated with traditional cryptocurrencies. And that, in essence, is why stablecoins have become such a powerful and important innovation. I mean, if you look at 2025, if you look at the transaction value throughput of Visa and MasterCard put together, that was sitting at something like 24, 26 trillion US dollars, but stablecoins were sitting at 33 trillion US dollars on value. So there's a real benefit there. So that simplicity is what makes stablecoins so powerful. They allow money to move digitally across borders at any day of time using that blockchain rails. So to be clear, stablecoins is nothing like CBDC, central bank digital currencies. And a useful way to understand this divergence is also, it comes from Andreas Antonopoulos, a well-known author and blockchain evangelist, and he uses the acronym called RIPCORE to explain what makes something truly blockchain technology. And RIPCORE stands for Revolutionary, Immutable, Public, Collaborative, Open, Resistant to Censorship, and Decentralized. Now, if you apply that framework of RIPCORE to CBDCs, you quickly see where the issue is coming from. So this raises an important question about whether CBDCs are really blockchain technology at all, and whether they are simply a digital version of existing money running on a very controlled system. But I think back to stablecoins, on the other hand, that's very different. They are private sector innovations. They live on a blockchain. They are programmable, and they operate somewhere between traditional finance and the world of crypto. And that's what we at Forbes Mazars have been doing in the last couple of months, is trying to bridge that gap between the world of traditional crypto and TradFi. So while stablecoins and CBDCs can absolutely exist side by side, they're not exactly the same thing, and they serve very different purposes. So with that context in mind, I think back to your question in regards to, is South Africa ready for a stablecoin revolution? My honest answer to that is no, not fully yet. But we are a lot closer than people realize. I think from a technological standpoint, South Africa is absolutely ready. We've got strong banking infrastructures. We've got sophisticated payment systems. We've got deep capital markets and a growing fintech ecosystem. So from a use case perspective, we're also ready. I mean, if you look at Africa and South Africa's largest migrant workforces, stablecoins solve real problems in South Africa, particularly around cross-border payments, remittance, settlement delays and access to a global market. But the one area where we fall short in terms of why I say we're not ready yet is because of clear regulations. I think this was highlighted in the budget speech of 2025, not 2026, 2025, where they actually told us they're going to be stablecoin regulations open for public comment. But that period came and went. So we never saw that. But just to reiterate this, is regulations is not about control. It's about protection. It protects consumers, it protects the financial system, and it gives confidence to serious market participants as well. And I think from my own perspective, the gap became very clear. Last week, I attended a cryptocurrency compliance and regulation conference in Johannesburg. And during one of the sessions, a representative from the regulator made the comment in terms of a discussion paper on stablecoins that is expected to be issued in the imminent future. Now, that's definitely a positive sign, which shows that stablecoins is on the agenda of the regulator. However, I am concerned, and my concern stems from what we saw in past history. I mean, we all saw this. In 2021, the Intergovernmental FinTech Working Group issued a discussion paper on how crypto assets should be regulated in South Africa. It then almost took, I think, 3 years before we saw that formal proposed regulations coming through. So during that time, global markets moved on and South Africa was largely reactive as opposed to leading. So my worry is that if we start again with only a discussion paper on stablecoins now, we could setting ourselves up for another long delay. Personally, I would have liked to see this proposed regulation being released to the public for comments that would allow industry participants, regulators, banks, auditors, policymakers to constructively add and refine that framework together. And I think timing really matters here. So stablecoins are becoming a part of the global financial plumbing. So if South Africa waits too long, innovation happens elsewhere. And I mean, we see that in the regulated environment. Capital flows elsewhere, skills migrate elsewhere, and we end up importing solution and rules instead of shaping them in a way that's good for our own economy. So the big question is in terms of how do we get ready? And my view is that we only can get ready with radical thinking. It requires that practical steps. We need clear legal definition so everyone understands what stablecoins is and how it's treated. We need sensible rules around the reserves and the disclosures so users can trust the tokens are properly backed. And we need clarity on how banks and custodians can participate safely within this environment. And we need alignment with global standards, as you mentioned, with MiCA and the Genius Act. South Africa remains connected to that international financial system.
All right, so let's talk about this discussion paper. And will these South African regulations, will they resemble those of MiCA in Europe and the Genius Act in the United States? And what are the key points that are in this discussion paper? Just give us a few highlights.
Sure. So, I mean, from my perspective, I definitely think that South African regulations will mirror or at least follow what we see in Europe and the US broadly. And I think a really useful point, as you mentioned, is that discussion or the diagnostic report, rather, issued by the Intergovernmental FinTech Working Group. And that report was issued in March 2025, so last year, March. And what the report did very well was to clearly identify where the current South African regulatory environment falls short when it comes to stablecoins. And importantly, if you compare those concerns to what has already been implemented in Europe with MiCA and the US with the Genius Act, you can see a clear pattern effectively emerging. So the first concern raised by the IFWG relates to that lack of segregation of customer funds. In South Africa today, customer funds are often not held in proper trust structures. So instead, they sit in normal bank account, part of the operations of the business, which means if an issuer fails, customers may not enjoy that proper insolvency protection. And you and I actually discussed this on a podcast several years ago when we saw the collapse of a crypto exchange in New Zealand. And effectively, those, let's say, clients of the exchange had to stand in line with other third-party creditors. And imagine having that same scenario in a rand-backed stablecoin that you expect back-to-back in one-to-one with underlying assets. So what MiCA and the Genius Act did to address this is they require customer funds to be legally segregated from the issuer itself. So those funds cannot be pledged, it cannot be reused, it cannot be rehypothecated. And the logic is effectively simple. A stablecoin is meant to represent safe, stable money. And when the reserves backing it must be protected from failure of the issuer to that same extent. So the second concern identified by the IFWG is a lack of transparency and weak disclosure. And this is something near to me being a financial auditor as well. In many cases, issuers provide unclear or inconsistent information about their reserves. So the governance structure, the tokens that are actually in circulation, the reserve claims are often self-published without independent verification. Again, under MiCA and the Genius Act, issuers are required to publish regular reserve backings, which needs to be subjected to independent attestation reports issued by independent third parties, by professional services firms such as Forbes Mazars. So this moves stablecoins away from the trust me, bro, everything is fine type of disclosure into something that looks far more like a traditional financial reporting. And it would be very surprised if South Africa didn't follow the same path here that we saw with MiCA and the Genius Act. The third area highlighted in the diagnostic reports relates to governance weaknesses. So what we often see is that issuers perform multiple roles at the same time. They might be issuing the stablecoin, providing the wallet, operating exchange, and act as market maker, all within the same group. And that creates an obvious conflict of interest that in many cases creates that independence risk, and we need oversight for that. So with both MiCA and the Genius Act, there's a clear separation of that roles. There's proper risk management, there's framework, there's independent oversight, there's explicit responsibility for compliance. In other words, stablecoin issues start to look much more like a regulated financial institution as just a fringe type of stablecoin issuer. The fourth concern raised by the IFWG is the absence of that prudential requirement. So at the moment, stablecoin issuers in South Africa are not subject to meaningful capital and liquidity requirements, and there's no real prudential framework governing who can issue stablecoins and under what conditions. So again, with Genius and the Genius Act and MiCA, they introduced these capital requirements. So liquidity standards, ongoing prudential oversight, and in some cases, issuers are brought under bank-like supervision, or at least something that's very close to that. And I've said this for years now, is stablecoins have such a massive impact if they fail, that it will ripple through the economy. So closely linked to that fifth concern that I highlighted in relation to reserve management risk, the IFWG pointed out that reserves are often inconsistent, sometimes unaudited, and sometimes held in instruments that are not aligned with best practice liquidity and credit risk standards. Now, that is a significant risk. If you think about the liquidity, if someone wants to redeem those stablecoins, are they able to redeem it? And credit risk in counterparty risk is a real risk faced by these stablecoin issuers. So under MiCA and the Genius Act, this is addressed by limiting reserves to high-quality liquid assets and by requiring frequent, sometimes even daily valuations of those reports. So this reduces the risk that stablecoins fails not because of fraud, but because of poor treasury management. Again, this is very clear blueprint that South Africa can effectively take. So the sixth concern raised by the diagnostic report is the unrestricted issuance and lack of regulatory gatekeeping. At the moment, almost anyone can issue a stablecoin in South Africa. Of course, some of them might need a crypto asset service provider license, but there's no pre-approval process and there's very little accountability. Internationally, of course, we saw this licensing regimes being rolled out. So issuers must meet minimum standards before they're allowed to enter the market. It's not about stifling innovation. It's about stakeholder protection. Without that gatekeeping, high-risk or undercapitalized issuers can enter the market, and history has shown us how badly that could end. So the seventh and second last issue relating to the uncertain redemption rights. So in many cases, users do not have a guaranteed legal right to redeem their stablecoins at par value or on demand. So this is actually quite interesting. So with Genius and the MiCA, they've actually made it a statutory right. So regulators can step in if redemptions are delayed or suspended. And that removes that legal ambiguity, especially during stressful events like a run on the bank or critical elements of consumer protection. So the eighth and final concern raised, in my view, by the IFWG relates to currency stability risk. And this is a legitimate concern that widespread use of a foreign currency stablecoin could undermine the rand in South Africa's monetary sovereignty. So interestingly enough, the US with the Genius Act, and quite genius in terms of what they've done, they've created demand for treasury bills, and that reinforces that domestic currency dominance. In South Africa, this raises an important question, specifically from exchange control regulations. I mean, I remember seeing a stablecoin issuer that's saying the assets backing the stablecoins are held within South Africa. But exchange control regulations talks about the exportation of a right to capital in addition to capital. So effectively, you're sending, let's say, a ZAR-backed stablecoin abroad, you might be externalizing a right to capital. So when you put all of this together, what becomes clear is South Africa is not operating in a vacuum. The IFWG's diagnostic report has already identified the same risks that regulators have identified in Europe and the US. So we've got this playbook that we can work off of when designing our regulations. The real question is not whether South Africa will resemble that of the US and Europe, but how quickly we will choose to align and how decisive we can move from diagnostics to implementation. So if we do that right, we can protect users, support innovation, and integrate South Africa into the global digital financial system rather than isolating ourselves with this lack of regulation.
Interesting. All right. Now, talking of regulation, there was a court case last year where the High Court ruled that cryptos are not currency and therefore there's no law stopping you sending cryptocurrency across the border. South African Reserve Bank has appealed this High Court ruling and is currently preparing new regulations to cover what is evidently a giant loophole. What's your reading of this? My understanding is that crypto exchanges are treating cross-border crypto transactions as if they were already regulated, even though they're not. Is this how you see it?
Yeah, I think this is a very, very important topic, and I think a very important question to ask, because it highlights one of the biggest gray areas in South Africa, especially in relation to crypto regulatory framework at the moment. So as you pointed out, last week we saw this very significant court case involving the South African Reserve Bank and Standard Bank. And at the heart of the case was whether cryptocurrency should be treated as capital for purposes of South African exchange control regulations. And the Reserve Bank position was that crypto should effectively fall within the exchange control red, meaning that moving crypto across borders should be subject to the same restrictions and approvals that apply to traditional fiat currencies such as the South African rand. So the High Court, however, didn't agree with that view. The court ruled that crypto assets are not currency, and importantly, that the South African Reserve Bank had not properly regulated or formally classified crypto within the exchange control framework. So as a result, there was no clear legal basis to say that sending crypto currency abroad was contravening exchange control regulation. So the South African Reserve Bank, as you mentioned, has subsequently appealed that decision. And I think that appeal is still pending. If I remember correctly, a final decision on the appeal is expected to be made in the month of April. So we will have clarity on that legal position in the near future. But that said, regardless of whether the South African Reserve Bank ultimately wins or loses that appeal, I think almost inevitably that we'll see a new amendment to exchange control regulations coming through shortly thereafter, similar that we saw with intellectual property. So in the meantime, this leaves us in a very gray area from a South African perspective. There's still a significant amount of capital flowing outside of the countries, and various data analytics from firms such as Sixpence, run by Karel de Jager, shows that there's meaningful daily and even monthly outflows on-chain from cryptocurrency exchanges in South Africa. Now, of course, many of this activity might be legitimate, but some of it's clearly being used to bypass the traditional exchange control regulations. And this is precisely what the Reserve Bank's concerns are. At the moment, South African crypto exchanges are not formally required to police that externalization event the same way as banks. So banks currently act as the gatekeeper. So if you want to send money offshore, you need to provide your single discretion allowance or your foreign investment allowance or appropriate approval. But that same formal structure does not apply to crypto yet. But I do expect that to change. So looking ahead, there's very likely that cryptocurrency exchanges will be pulled into a similar gatekeeping role. In other words, before you're able to externalize your value via crypto, you need to provide that single discretion allowance or supporting documentation. I think in my view, how this would play out is when you send funds from, or let's say you send crypto from a local registered CASP to a CASP, that wouldn't trigger exchange control regulations. But as soon as you send that to a foreign crypto asset service provider or virtual asset service provider or self-custody, that would trigger the exchange control. And that is what the exchanges effectively would need to police. So this would bring crypto much more squarely in the existing exchange control regulating framework rather than trying to treat it as something else in its entirety. So the key takeaway is that even though the law has not fully caught up yet, The regulatory intent is obvious, and both exchanges and users should be preparing for as much more structured and controlled environment going forward, specifically in relation to exchange control regulations.
Okay, finally, Vihan, just quickly, as we're running out of time, we've seen the banks move quite aggressively into stablecoins. Standard Bank is the custody provider for the new stablecoin called Zaru. Absa's got its own stablecoin in the pilot stages. Things are moving pretty fast. Overseas, we're seeing a lot of banks issuing their own stablecoins. Is this the future?
Yeah, I think definitely this is the direction we're moving in. I mean, in South Africa, as you mentioned, examples in terms of Standard Bank acting as a custodian provided by Zaru, Absa piloting its own stablecoins. These are strong signals. They are systematically important banks, and they would not be engaging with this level if they didn't see stablecoin as something that will form part of the future financial system. So from my perspective, this is a natural evolution. Once you strip away the hype, stablecoins solve very real problems for banks and their clients. They enable faster settlement, improved liquidity management, programmable money, and a more efficient cross-border transaction. So for banks that are already under pressure for modernizing their infrastructure, stablecoins offer a practical way to do that without completely reinventing the world. So I'm fortunate enough with my global role at Forbes Mazars to see how this is playing out internationally. It's almost like a glass ball. So in Europe and in the Asia-Pacific region, where stablecoin regulations are more mature, we're seeing banks either acquiring stablecoin issuer, investing in them, or bringing those capabilities directly into the group structure. In some cases, stablecoin issuers effectively become part of that bank's broader business model. And what's interesting is that once regulations are clear, banks don't see stablecoins as threats. They see them as infrastructure, something that can be integrated into payments, treasury, custody, capital markets. And we start to see that same evolution locally. In South Africa, we've been involved with stablecoin issues that not yet launched, but based on market expectation, likely to become one of the largest stablecoin issues in the country by market capitalization. And this tells me that there's a serious ambition and serious capabilities emerging in the local market. So what we try to do at Forbes Mazars as well is to help future-proof these projects. Rather than designing a stablecoin only to meet today's requirements, we look to regulations on a global basis. We ask whether the product would stand up under frameworks like MiCA and the Genius Act. And that means thinking about governance, reserves, disclosure, redemption rights, and controls from day one. So by doing that, the issuers are not constantly playing catch up with regulation. Instead, they are building products that can scale and banks are comfortable partnering with. And that regulators basically acts as that catalyst. So yes, things are moving fast, but I actually see this as a positive sign. Banks are getting involved, bringing discipline, credibility, and scale. And stablecoins stop being seen as an experimental startup once it integrates as it has. So I think the key takeaway is here, stablecoins are no longer on the fringes of finance. They are moving into the core. And the fact that South African banks are already participating just shows how quickly this space is maturing.
Fascinating. And we're going to watch the space, obviously, very closely with your help, Vihan Olafia, partner and global co-head of digital assets at Forbes Mazars. Thanks very much for your time, Vihan.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.